So far, we've had some really excellent lectures about sleep as a phenomenon and some measurements from the scalp, the EEG, which gives us a little bit of a hint for what might be happening in the brain during sleep. But there are 100 billion neurons, and they're chattering away, interconnected with each other, and the EEG just represents a really gross average over many millions of neurons. So if we really want to understand what's really happening in our brains during sleep, there's no substitute for popping the hood and seeing what's in the machine. And this is exactly what a large group of sleep researchers have been doing over the last few decades. And in this talk, I'm going to be focusing here at the level of single neurons, recording some single neurons, from networks and local field potentials, which are recordings taken directly with an electrode in the cortex or in the part of the brain that they're examining, but not looking at a single neuron, but rather at the average electrical activity probably from hundreds or thousands of neurons, which is intermediate between the single neuron level and the EEG level, and it turns out to be very informative. So the first example I want to give of what has been called replay, and this is a term that's been used for the patterns that occur during the day that reoccur in the brain at night, is actually in the best example that we have, and it's from the bird, the zebra finch, which Philip Lowe introduced earlier this morning. So in fact, to give you an idea of zebra finch is a songbird. It learns a song consisting of syllables, and I'll play it for you, although, let's see, is it possible to actually plug in the speaker? Let's say I don't see a... Which? Okay, so no sound. Oh, okay. Okay, so we'll do this low tech, okay? Okay, that gives you an idea. It's very rapid. The whole thing takes about a second and a half. And it is very stereotyped and very precise. So here is the bird brain from the point of view of the songbird, the song system. And the only part that I want to focus on is this area here called RA. And this is the part of the bird brain that produces the motor output that drives the syrinx, that creates the very rapid vibrations. Now, this area here gets a sequence of inputs from a motor center, the HVC center, and auditory inputs from an auditory area, field L. Dan Margolyish has recorded from RA in birds, both when they're singing and when they're sleeping. And here's what he found. So here is the spectrogram that you saw earlier. By the way, the frequency here is on the vertical axis. Time is on the horizontal axis. And the power here is where it's bright red or yellow. So you can see these are the individual syllables, the so-called notes of the bird song. There's a sequence of them. They're very stereotyped. And here is the output from a single neuron in RA showing a burst of spikes at this precise moment of time, here and here, but not during syllable D, one burst at the beginning of syllable E, and so on. So that is presumably part of the motor output, which is actually driving some of the signature here for the specific frequencies found in the note. Now, the bird falls asleep, and now spontaneously, without any stimulation whatsoever, you find embedded in background activity, spontaneous activity, sequences like this one here, which almost exactly match the actual motor output during a song. And this is what he calls replay. It's the bird replaying the same motor sequence that it would produce if it were actually singing and awake. So here's a second recording from a different neuron. Here are the syllables. They are in a somewhat different order. Here is, again, a recording from a single neuron, and you can see that it has specific locations where it's firing. And here now is a spontaneous sequence, again, showing a very strong match between the times of individual bursts and individual spikes, which mirror or mimic the behavior, the activity pattern seen in the awake state. So this is very exciting because it really is the first strong evidence that we have that something of activity is occurring during the sleep state on a neuron, single neuron basis that somehow represents perhaps a form of practice for what the bird is going to be doing when it's awake. By the way, the birds learn through a process of sensory motor learning to mimic the song of the father, even the dialect of the father. So there's a learning process that has to take place. This, by the way, is in an adult bird, so this is one where it's learned the song. The second place where we have strong evidence for replays is in the hippocampus. The hippocampus has already come up in this meeting as an area of the brain that's important for long-term memory. So in patients who bilaterally lose the hippocampus and the brain regions surrounding it, they have amnesia. They are unable to remember things from one moment to the next. That's both anterograde into the future and retrograde into the past. Now, a real breakthrough occurred in our understanding of the hippocampus by a discovery that was made by John O'Keefe back in 1971. What he did was to record from single neurons in the hippocampus of freely moving rats. Now, it's a very difficult experiment because you can imagine that the rat's running around. How can you possibly hold on to a single neuron while it's jostling the electrode? But in fact, he perfected the technique, and I'm going to demonstrate it for you now. This is so surprising that I don't think you'd believe me if I just told you about this, but I'm going to actually demonstrate it. This is a figure-eight maze, and the rat's going to be running around in the maze, as you'll see. It has two lights on its head. There's a red light in the front of the snout and a little green light in the back, so you can see not only where the head is, but which direction it's pointing. And I also will need the microphone in order to be able to hear the spikes. Actually, I can use this microphone. This one actually seems to be more sensitive than yours. Sorry. And every spike is going to be a little click. So that is an action potential. When a neuron fires a spike, it's a message that's being carried from that neuron to all the neighboring neurons. So it's telling you something about the world. And in this particular cell that you'll see, it's telling us something about this corner of the rat's world. And this is a summary of all the spikes that occurred over a period of about 10 minutes. But you're going to actually be hearing it for yourself while the animal is in the experiment. Here it is going down the middle, going up the side on the left. Okay, so I think that this is, for me, a convincing demonstration, and it's been done many thousands of times in many labs around the world. These are called play cells, and there are cells that respond not just to this location, other cells respond to other locations around the maze. And the idea is as the animal traverses its environment, there's an internal map within the hippocampus telling the rat exactly where it is and where it's going. Now, using the play cell as a way for assaying, you know, what the experience that the animal is having, it's possible to do experiments now and compare the activity patterns in the hippocampus during an experience with a maze like this, a figure eight maze, and then later while the animal is sleeping. So first I want to just, this is from a paper recent paper actually just published this year by G. and Wilson from Matt Wilson's lab at MIT. And it's a simultaneous recording from a place cell in the hippocampus. And this is a cell that fired when the rat was moving along the maze and went into the corner, left-hand corner here. And also simultaneously from the visual cortex. And that's shown here. The visual cortex has neurons in it which respond to visual stimuli, specific cues. In this particular case, the cell fired in this corner as well, possibly because there was a cue, a particular shape or a color that set off that cell. Now, the path is going to be numbered from 0 to 200, 0 to 200, this part here. And if we look at the first at the hippocampus, we can see that as the rat moves along, there's a nice narrowly tuned place cell at that corner. In the case of the visual cortex up here, it's much broader. And you can see that it fires not just at one location, but at several, because it may be responding to the same visual cue in two locations. This experiment was repeated on the next day. And you can see that the place cells are in the same place. The firing rate, the total number of spikes, is greater, but the same pattern, spatial pattern, exists. Normal variability. Okay, now we're going to take a closer look at seven cells in that, let's look first at the hippocampus. The hippocampus is the panel here on the right. And here are actually five cells in the hippocampus that have place fields that are organized here, stacked on top of each other in their order as the rat is moving in the maze. And this is a single trial, five neurons being recorded simultaneously. You can see there's a burst of firing at each of these locations. And if we do that over and over again, we can get a little peak here showing the average number of spikes. And you can see they're quite compact and they're in a sequential order. Now, this is during one of the running episodes. Immediately after recording from this, they let the rat go to sleep. And during the sleep episode, they recorded from the very same neurons, and this is an example of one frame from the sleep recording, and you can see that the cells are firing in more or less the same order that occurs during the awake phase. Here are the averages, where they average over many of these episodes, and you can see that there's clearly some correlation between the firing of the cells compared to the recordings of the same cells before running in the maze. Before running in the maze, these cells were not correlated at all. So that suggests that the experience of running through a maze and having the cells fire in this particular order imprinted and produced a replay of that very same sequence during sleep. That's the hippocampus, and actually that was known earlier, and I should also say that this is during slow-wave sleep, the period of sleep during which you have deep, low frequencies, high-amplitude, low-frequency sleep. Well, let's look at the visual cortex. Again, during the running, we see that there's receptive fields where the cell fires, roughly now again ordered according to the position on the maze. Here are the averages. These little bars, by the way, are the means of the distribution. And here now is a single frame taken from the very same neurons during slow wave sleep. And we can see, again, they're very highly correlated and roughly with the same sequence. Here are the averages. But there's a big difference here. And I wonder if anybody's picked it out. There's something that's really different between the experience and the replay. And I'll give you a hint. It has something to do with time. Look at these. Yeah, exactly. Look at the scale bar here. That tells you the time interval. This is a half a second. This is a second. This whole event here takes place twice as fast as the actual running. Well, it's easy to run faster when you're doing it in your mind, obviously. And here, it's even more. This is a 2/10 of a second. And that means that it's been speeded up by a factor of 5. And this is a consistent finding that this replay phenomenon tends to be at a much higher rate, compressed, as if you've taken the experience and you've compressed it. And then the hippocampus, we know, during this slow wave episode, is in a state in which it's producing these bursts of firing, of activity. Let's see, where's the hippocampus here? So it's producing these bursts of spikes, and the cortex, which is in slow wave sleep, is listening to the hippocampus. So during the day, when you're awake, the hippocampus is listening to the cortex, picking up patterns, storing them away. And at night, during slow wave sleep, it seems to be replaying them at a much faster rate. Now, Philip pointed out that there's another phase of sleep that doesn't get nearly as much attention as either rapid eye movement sleep, REM sleep, or slow wave sleep. And this is intermediate sleep, stage 2 sleep, during which there are spindles and K-complexes. And I just wanted to show you what a spindle looks like from inside the brain. Right? On the outside of the brain, it's a little wiggle on the EEG. But if you put a depth electrode and record the local field potential, which is labeled here EEG, but it's the local field potential from the cortex, you can see that it consists of these spikes coming at about 10 per second, lasting for several seconds, and it's quite generalized in the sense that it includes, if you recorded from the same, from another electrode a millimeter or two away, you would find exactly the same synchronized spikes occurring across the cortex over centimeters. Now, this recording was taken from Mircea Steriad's lab, and he was a master at being able to record intracellularly from single cells, and this is from the cat. So here's a cell that he had recorded from intracellularly with an electrode that actually is inside the cell. Then later he stained it so you can actually see it's a pyramidal cell in layer 5, which is a cell that projects out of the cortex. Here's another cell in layer 6. And here are the recordings from those two cells. And as you can see, the membrane potential is jittering up and down. And occasionally you get a very big spike. That's the action potential that we mentioned earlier, that were the ticks that you heard on the recording. And now you can see, if you look really, really closely, that these ticks are occurring when the local field potential is reaching a minimum here and here and here and here. And in fact, sometimes you get the single cell, two cells firing at the same time, but the cells, by and large, a single cell will not fire on every one of these downstrokes. Some other cell will be firing during the downstroke. So it's clear that there's a concerted pattern of activity that's occurring. It's very highly orchestrated. And it occurs quite commonly and is a diagnostic feature of intermediate stage 2 sleep. We have no idea what the spindle is doing for us. We do it all the time. And in fact, if we spend a third of our sleeping time in intermediate sleep, this must have some important purpose. Otherwise, why is it there? Of course, that's easy to say, but it's very hard to actually make any progress. Well, here's some progress. This is an experiment that was done, again, in Matt Wilson's lab in 1998. And here he was recording from two areas again. The hippocampus shown here, which we know has these place cells. And then in the back of the brain, in the front of the brain here, this is the front, this is the back, in the prefrontal cortex, where he's recording single units and field potentials. So we already saw the field potential, and here, in fact, is a spindle. So it's clear that this is an area that the animal is asleep during stage 2 sleep. And now we want to compare the two recordings, and that's shown here. So here is the hippocampus, and at this moment in time, we get one of these high-frequency bursts, this compressed replay that's going on in the hippocampus. And it, in fact, is a very unusual. Yuri Bujaki showed some years ago that you can see very fast, high-frequency, 200 hertz, what he calls ripples, which are superimposed in the field potential, suggesting that this is a very, very high-frequency, very highly precisely timed event that's occurring here. So this is the hippocampus, and below it, recorded in the prefrontal cortex, is the spindle. And you'll see that there's a time lock here, that the spindle occurs very, very shortly after the firing in the hippocampus. It's as if the hippocampus triggered the spindle, and then the cortex, once it responded, goes into a more of a slow wave activity pattern, shown here. Now, this is on a fast time scale, 1 second. Here's a slower time scale, 20 seconds. And you can see that this relationship between the ripple and this spindle seems to be recurring throughout that episode. The 20 seconds episode happens probably about a dozen times. So this is very suggestive. It suggests that there's a dialogue going on between the hippocampus and the cortex, and it's linking together features of activity that had been seen in isolation in the hippocampus and in the prefrontal cortex, suggesting that there is some causal relationship between them that we don't really yet fully appreciate. So that leaves us with the final diagram here, which is a summary diagram, which is out of date, has to be updated. We know that as you fall asleep, you go through these sequence of stages through intermediate sleep and then slow wave sleep. And then during the night, there is alternation between slow-wave sleep and REM up here. And then gradually, during the night, there's less slow-wave sleep and more REM, and eventually you wake up. So let's look at the hippocampus and the cortex during that process. We know that when you fall into slow-wave sleep, that the neocortex is listening to the hippocampus. So there's transfer of information, perhaps, in that direction. Now, in fact, I think that the arrow should also go backwards. I think that it's actually a handshake going on between these two structures. But in any case, we know that that there is a path that is open. During REM sleep, it's reversed. During the time when the cortex now is activated, it has high frequencies, low amplitude EEG, we know that the hippocampus goes into this what's called theta mode, which looks a lot like slow waves, but it's actually even more stereotyped. It's about 4 to 8 hertz. And we know that it's in that mode that the hippocampus is listening to the cortex. And that continues to go back and forth throughout the night with the ratio of time spent where the cortex is listening to the hippocampus gradually decreasing, and the time during which the hippocampus is listening to the cortex is increasing until finally at the end of the night you wake up. But what are they talking about? You know, are they literally, is the hippocampus playing back snippets of experience you've had during the day? And remember now, the cortex is in slow wave sleep. It's not, you're not in dream sleep here. So there's a real interesting issue here that we really have to explore that has to do with the actual dynamics, the millisecond by millisecond timing of the specific activity patterns that we see, both in the hippocampus and the cortex. There is a dialogue occurring, but it's happening on a much faster time scale than we ever imagined. So, and finally, I just want to thank the collaborators I've had over the last 18 years. David McCormick, who's at Yale, who has been recording from these neurons in the thalamus and in the cortex. And we've incorporated a lot of his data into the models that we've developed of sleep spindles and slow-wave sleep. Alex Borbély, who is very instrumental, he's at Zurich, very instrumental in sleep homeostasis, the idea that if you don't sleep, you have to pay it back. And then finally, Mircea Steriad, who is my mentor in the sleep field, who very tragically died last year. And I was looking back, actually, at his career, and it's just unbelievably rich. He was born in 1925. That was 1 year after human EEG was discovered by Hans Berger. And it stretched over the entire development of sleep research up to the modern time. And he was on the forefront. He was the one who was doing the very best in vivo recording from cats almost up until his last year of life. So I really would like to just acknowledge the fact that he's really been a giant in the field and really has set the standard. So thank you very much.
Thank you.